Welcome to 721 Live. I'm Sam Hunter. I am glad that you are with us. Today is Friday. Can I get you just to push back against all the stuff that's going on and all the plans and confusion and take a deep breath and listen for what God might say to you? He is always looking to speak into our hearts. It may not be my words, but if we're listening, He will speak. And today I'm going to start a series that is really sort of falls under this heading of evangelism is as simple as 1, 2, 3. Evangelism is as simple as 1, 2, 3. And it's sort of along that same stop and think series that we've been working through for the last several months. Stop and think, what did Jesus mean when He said, you're to be the light of the world? You're to be my light into this world. We're going to talk a lot about that today and next week and weeks after that. Get to that discussion in just a minute. Let me remind you, 721 Live is the radio arm of 721 Ministries. Just check us out on the website, 721ministries.org, 721ministries.org, number 721. And by the way, 721 Ministries has a Facebook page, and you can check that out too. You'll find out all about us just by going onto those sites and looking around and seeing what we do. We do lots of different things. But today, I want to start talking about what did Jesus mean? And I want to start with this, just a conversation I had just about a week ago. I sort of reconnected with an old friend from high school, and she was a wonderful old friend, and we had lunch together, and it's been 30 years since I've seen her. And she asked me about, well, tell me what happened after college. What did you do? What's going on for the last 30 years? And I said, well, I started off going back to my hometown of Sumter and working as a structural engineer. And she sort of interrupted me. She said, was that your plan after college, to be a structural engineer? And I said, no, not really. And she said, well, then what was your career plan? Because she had a very, very direct and very focused career plan. She went into TV and journalism and that kind of thing. And I know that's what she had planned all the way through college. She said, what was your career plan? And I just gave this sort of lame response. I never really had a plan. And I felt sort of lame saying it, but now I have thought about it, and I can tell you, I do have a plan. I have a plan for the rest of my life, and as much as I can affect it, as much as I can pursue it, I have a plan. It's not an overly detailed plan, because I always leave room for God to do whatever He wants to do, but it is a big picture plan that will guide me for the rest of my life. And here it comes. Number one, I don't want to die looking back and wondering if my life counted for anything in the grand scheme of things. I don't want to die, and I know you don't either. I don't want to be coming up on death and be looking back and wondering if my life really counted for anything in the big scheme of things. And I'm thinking eternally now. I'm thinking of this world, but I'm also thinking eternally. If I just spent the last ever how many years it is in my life looking back and going, is anything going to follow that? I mean, does anything have any real eternal value? Because I have learned that the truth is, as blunt as it is and as cold as it might sound, if it's not eternally significant, it's eternally insignificant. So, number one, I don't want to die looking back wondering if I really counted for anything. And number two, I want to live this life right now to the fullest. To the fullest. I hope that it moves into eternal value, and I'm going to make sure I will do everything I can to play a role in that. But I also want to live this life to the fullest. So I step back and I say, well, how am I going to accomplish this? How to avoid the one and maximize the other, the fullness of life. How to avoid worrying and wondering if it meant anything, and how to maximize this life to the fullest. And I guess I could read books by wise men and women and study what they consider important. And I could listen to talks by successful people and even people that I would respect, not just successful people, maybe embroiled in the secular world, but successful people I know have a spiritual value to their life. I guess I also could follow the culture. I tried that. I guess I could even follow the church culture with all its activities and good works and all that. I've tried all those things, and they all graded out at about a C-. So now, maybe I'll read and study what Jesus considered to be a high priority. Maybe I'll listen to what Jesus had to say about finding this fullest of fullness in life. You think that might be a good idea? I know I'm a spiritual gnat, but I think I'm coming around to, I'm going to find out and concentrate on what He considered. You know, Jesus taught about a lot of things. He taught about a lot of things, but He indicated that really one of his very, very, very top priorities, if not the top priority after defeating the work of the devil, he said it like this in Luke 19:10. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost. Pretty simple. The Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost. So that's pretty important to Jesus. And if it's that important to Jesus, then I'm going to make sure it's that important to me. And Jesus, in all his teachings, and all the things that I could follow, and I do, and I read them, and I study them, he emphasized one of his top priorities for me. Sure, he had a lot of things in his teachings about what I could do to find the full life and the A-plus life, and what I would want to avoid that will detract from all that. But I see very clearly that one of his top priorities for me in his grand scheme of things is this. I will make you fishers of men. I will make you, Sam, a fisher of men if you will join in my efforts, if you will let me. So if Jesus wants this for me, I want this for me. You see, I get the impression when Jesus was with his disciples on the last night, John 15, and he says to them, this is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. And then he says, and I appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. See, I get the sense that that really falls under this umbrella of, I've come to seek and save all of men and women that were lost. And by the way, that's so important to me, but I also want you to do it as part of your role. So number one, it's important to Jesus that I shine his light, that I get involved in this evangelism. And we're going to talk over the weeks about how simple and easy it is. And it's not what you thought it was. And it has such a potential for good, but such a potential for harm. Number one, it's important to Jesus. That's why I want to get involved in it. That's why I want to make it part of my life plan. And number two, he says it's part of my role, that it be a part of my life plan. So my new plan is to follow Jesus and to seek to play a role in his scheme to shine his light into this dimly lit world. And I might say this dim-witted world on top of that, so that others will see he is the way, the only way, but also the absolute best way. Now, will this enhance my goal of avoiding the vain and void life? And will it maximize finding that life to the fullest that Jesus says I want? Well, John, Jesus' best friend, he sure seemed to think so. In 1 John, he says this right at the very beginning of the letter, in the first chapter, we proclaim to you what we have seen and heard. This is what John says. We proclaim to you what we have seen and heard, so that you also may have fellowship with us. And then he says, we write this to make our joy complete. You get the sense that John's saying, if I'm not sharing this, my joy is incomplete. If I'm not sharing this, I don't have the complete life that Jesus wants for me. Complete joy, full of joy. Paul, who comes along and does a lot of speaking for Jesus, he seemed to echo that his agreement about this path to the fullness of life when he said, I pray, and this is in a letter to Philemon, verse 6, I pray that you may be, listen now, I pray that you may be active in sharing your faith. I pray that you may be active in sharing your faith so that you will have, listen now, a full understanding of every good thing we have in Christ. I pray, Paul says, that you may be active in sharing your faith so that you will have a full understanding of every good thing we have in Christ. Do you hear John saying, I do this to make my joy complete. I share it to make my joy complete. And I hear Paul, God, through Paul, through both of them, saying, if you do this, you're going to get closer to that full understanding of the life I have for you. And on the converse, if I don't do it, I'm going to have the C-minus life. Complete joy, full of every good thing. I want that. Don't you? So first off, it's important to God that we share and shine, that we plant seeds, which we're going to talk a lot about today and even in the coming weeks. Number one, it's important to God, so I want it to be important to me. Number two, it's part of my role, so I want to play my part in the role that God has for me, that Jesus wants for me. And number three, they make it clear that it's part of the A-plus life, that without it, I'm going to be somewhat incomplete. My joy is going to be incomplete. Something's going to be missing. And I've seen that, and you probably have experienced it from time to time, when you have had the wonderful opportunity to shine light in someone's life, the depth and fullness and the richness that comes from that experience. Missing that leaves me in the C-minus life. Now, it's interesting. In Luke 14, Jesus makes this very, very famous, but I think misunderstood statement that if you're going to follow me, I want you to count the cost. Following me means you're going to count the cost first. Now, when you hear this, what comes to mind? When Jesus says, if you're going to be my disciple, I want you to count the cost first. I think that probably what comes to mind is all the negatives, all the things that you're going to have to give up, maybe the burdens that you're going to have to take on. But a true cost-benefit analysis will weigh both the cost and benefits of both action and inaction. So when Jesus says, I want you to weigh the cost of following me, if you really weighed the benefits and the cost, you'd be weighing the cost of not following him. And that would prove to be unacceptable. Forget any cost of following. They would pale in comparison to the cost of not following him. I think it's the same thing. It applies to this idea of sharing and shining your faith with other people, sharing and shining God's light into other people's lives, not doing it, whatever cost you might associate with doing this will pale in comparison to the C-minus life of missing the joy that comes with it. So the theme I'm picking up is that to fully experience the A-plus spiritual life, and thus the A-plus life in general, is that I want to be active, let me say, proactive and purposeful in sharing and shining the light of Jesus and his love and his grace. I think that falls right under the heading when he says, in the same way, let your light shine before men, so that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. I'm spending the first part of this show talking about why would we share and shine our light into other people's lives? Why would we be purposeful and deliberate about being involved in evangelism? See, Dallas Willard says, I love this. He says, the old gospel message is how to get into heaven after I die. The new gospel message, the one that was really always the gospel message from Jesus, is how to get into heaven before I die. How to step into the kingdom and live that life before I die, right here on this earth. Now, let me just take that a step further. When Jesus asked me, and he asked you, to share with others the light he's shown into your life, I think he really kind of poked a little fun at us when he said, you are the light of the world. You're supposed to be. You're the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. And then I think he kind of jabbed a little bit, and he said, neither do people light a lamp, put it under a bowl. I think he's saying, you may think that you're shining some light, but most of your light, you're hiding it under a bowl. So if we're to follow Jesus and live to please him, how do we let our light shine before men? How do we let our light shine before men? And in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about how simple and easy it is. We're going to get started on this journey of evangelism. It's as simple and as easy as 1, 2, 3. We'll be right back. More straight ahead. Welcome back to the second half of 721 Live. I'm glad you're with us. I'm Sam Hunter, and I am talking to you today about this whole idea of evangelism is as simple and as easy as 1, 2, 3. I want to work through this over the next few weeks so that you can see that it's not what we thought it was, but what it can be and how easy and simple it can be and how effective it can be. By the way, I want to make a note that I learned this outline through Search Ministries up in Baltimore. Terrific men's ministry. Did some training with them, and they created this outline, and I just hats off to them because they just have done such a wonderful job with it. But in the first half, I was talking and trying to set up the whole idea of why would we want to be sure that we are active, proactive, and deliberate more than you already are. And I know maybe you today are listening to me. You might be one who says, I think I'm doing a pretty good job. Well, step it up a notch. Step it up a notch. You might be listening. You might be saying, I just never have been comfortable. I'm just going to do lifestyle evangelism. I'm just going to let my light shine by the way I live my life. And that's good. And yes, that's the beginning. That's the starting point. But this is so much more than that. That can be a cop-out. That can be a cop-out. I'm going to make it so easy and so simple that you'll see, you know what, I really can do more of that. So in the first half, I kept just talking about this is what pleases God. This is what makes him happy. And I guess I should first ask, do you really want to please God? I mean, I know you do, but are you really focused on that? That is the richest of lives. The whole idea that so many people are trapped in this cycle of trying not to displease Him. Well, that's no life. That's a C-, if there ever was. But living to please Him, and we realize how important this is to God. How important. Jesus wanted to make sure we understood. And that's part of this whole outline. 1, 2, 3. One person matters to God. One person. And you don't have to save 20. You don't save them anyway. You don't have to be involved with 20. Just one person. One person matters to God. Jesus makes it clear that, you know what? That He makes it clear this is what gives Him the greatest pleasure. Did you know that Jesus makes it perfectly clear that when one person, just one person, turns his life around, sees the light, turns his life back towards God, a celebration kicks off in heaven. Party balloons, party favors, woo, music, horns, high fives, a virtual gala kicks off in heaven when one person turns his life back towards Jesus, towards God. Is that not motivation enough? In Luke 15, he tells three stories, the parable of the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. We hear it as the prodigal son, but in each one of those, he says when that sheep is found, there's rejoicing in heaven. When that coin is found, there's rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. And of course, at the end of the story about the lost son, the father, representing our heavenly father, throws a huge banquet, invites everybody. One person is so important to God that all we need to do is play a role with that one. Is there not one person in your sphere of influence? Not 20, just one. One person matters immensely to God. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, okay, I get that. I hear that. I can read Luke 15. I can read those stories. I've heard that before. Okay, maybe I hadn't even thought about it, but yeah, okay, it's kind of a cool idea that I could play some role in kicking off a huge celebration in heaven. But I got to tell you, Sam, what are you asking me to do? Are you asking me to go out and bug people about Jesus or walk around with my Bible all the time or quote scripture in every conversation? Because I got to tell you, I'm not at all comfortable with that. I can hear my friends saying that. I can hear maybe you thinking that. I'm not comfortable with that. I've seen it done. I've had it done to me. I even tried it one time and it blew up in my face. The whole thing is just awkward and it's nerve-wracking and I just can't do it. I just can't do it. Well, I would say, relax. I would say, relax, please. Evangelism, which is nothing more than sharing good news. That's what evangel means, good news. It's just as easy and as simple as 1, 2, 3. One person matters immensely to God. Two principles. This is so important. If you don't hear anything else I say, hear this. Evangelism is a process, and God is responsible for the results. Evangelism is a process, and God is responsible for the results. Evangelism is a process, and God is responsible for the results. Evangelism is a process. It's not an event. It's not a one-time event. It is a whole involved process that may run over months or years or weeks or days, but it is not an event, and the results are not up to you. Evangelism is a process, and the results are not up to you. So relax. Think about it. I asked the men this week. I said, let's put up on the board all the negative images that we have when you hear the word evangelism. All the negative images and all the negative feelings you have, and also all the thoughts that you might have about pushing back against the idea of becoming proactive in this. And of course, you know, you got the evangelists on TV that are always asking for money, and you got the idea of somebody on the corner with a bullhorn hollering at people, telling them they're damned for eternity, and you got all those kinds of things, and then you got the idea of somebody putting a lot of pressure on you that they sit down, they present a gospel message, and then they say, do you want to pray the sinner's prayer? And all these things that we've either seen, or we associate negativity with it, or maybe you're afraid that you're not adequate. I had one friend say, I love this whole idea, but I'm just not far enough along to even think about it. I think you're moving too far ahead of me. See, you don't feel qualified. You know, fear of rejection, fear of what they may think about me. I've had pressure put on me. I'm not a high pressure kind of person. I don't want to do that. See, that's all falling under the category, the mistaken idea that evangelism is an event, and that you're responsible for the results. You know, if you just step back, I am so glad that I see so clearly that your eternal salvation, that anyone's eternal salvation is not up to me, and it's not up to my perfect presentation, and it's not up to my sales ability or my persuasive abilities or my ability to present the gospel message in the clearest of forms and the best of ways. I am so glad that's not up to me. How silly is it to think that it's up to you? All the negative feelings that we have, all the pushback, all the anxiety that comes with it, it all falls under that category of, I think it's an event, and the results are up to me. So if I get somebody at the table, like I'm trying to sell them a copy or a life insurance policy or anything, we all know in sales that if you let them get away from the table without signing the contract, the chances of getting them to sign the contract diminish greatly. We take that approach to sharing and shining, and it makes everybody uncomfortable. And it typically causes us to either handle it the wrong way, which does a lot of harm for the kingdom, or it gets us to where we just cop out altogether. We just choke, or we back out, we freeze up, we just won't do it. You know, I was thinking, the results are up to God. Evangelism is a process, and results are up to God. God, if God has someone that He's calling, He's going to get into their hearts, and He's going to work. He's going to do the heavy lifting. You know, really, what we can do more than anything else is get in the way by handling this the wrong way. We can delay the process by getting in the way and handling it incorrectly and putting pressure on people. But I want to talk to you about how easy it is just to plant seeds, because it is a process and God is responsible for the results. Let me read to you from 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Paul is writing to the people in Corinth, and apparently they've started in this debate about who baptized who and who's responsible for their salvation. And they got into this thing over who is it, Paul or Apollos. And Paul goes, wait, whoa, what? Wait, are you crazy? He says in verse 5, what after all is Apollos and what is Paul? Only servants through whom you came to believe. Only servants through whom you came to believe, as the Lord has assigned to each his task. Now listen to what he says. I planted the seed. Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. I planted the seed. Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The man who plants and the man who waters have one purpose, and each will be rewarded according to his own labor. What God is telling you is relax. Be very purposeful and proactive about planting seeds, being a part of the process, but you are not responsible for the results. It couldn't be more clear. The man who plants and the man who waters, they just are playing their role. But interestingly enough, God says through Paul, I'm rewarding everybody in the process the same way. See, I could tell you story after story of how I've seen this process unfold. And I've worked with friends, I've talked with friends for, you know, years. And then they go to lunch with another guy, and he talks to them about his faith. And the next thing you know, they've gotten down on their knees and surrendered their life to Christ. And I'm going, wait a minute, I worked with the guy for 3 years. You go in there and just have lunch with him, you get the notch on your belt. You're the one, you get the credit in heaven. No, it doesn't work that way, and I know it doesn't. I'm kidding when I say that. I'm watering, I'm planting, I'm watering. You know, it's so simple. I got to tell you this story. Over in Spartanburg, where I do half of my ministry, one of the men who had gotten involved, and he was certainly no professional evangelist, he certainly had no great gospel presentation, but he's just sitting in the sauna at the Y, and this man is pouring his heart out to him, and he says, I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to pray for you. And that's all he said. Next thing you know, this guy that he said that to comes up to him and says, I heard what you said, and that really got my attention. There's a man here I'd like for you to talk to. I think if you could just help him out a little bit. He invites him to our 7:21 lunches. Over a period of time, a couple of guys shine the light into him. It doesn't look like he's hearing anything, but the next thing you know, he comes in and says, I've surrendered my life. I've surrendered my life to Christ. A week later, he dies in a car accident. All because... Not he did die all because he found the Lord, all because some man sitting in a sauna said, I'm going to pray for you, to somebody else. There was no pressure. There was no clothes. There was no great gospel presentation. Evangelism is a process, and God is responsible for results. Can I get you, and we'll talk more about this next week, can I get you to be purposeful and proactive about just planting little seeds of God's grace and God's light and God's kindness? Just little seeds. You don't have to overwhelm anyone. And it can be so much fun when you realize you're not responsible for the results. More on this next week. Each week we publish it on our website, a recap of this week's topics. We call it the Putting Green. You can find it. So long, God's peace to you. I hope to see you next Friday.